I want to talk a little bit about leading discussions. Then we're going to have a discussion about leading discussions. And then I want to talk a little about how to analyze a discussion, observe a discussion, and write about it, because that's an assignment you've got coming up. The first thing I want to say is that classroom discussions are really an important part of a successful English class. In fact, they're an important part of almost any class, but especially an English class. Students go through school very often. There's a bunch of research on this, and they say not a word. They go day in and day out, and they do almost nothing. But a discussion that they participate in, that's an active, involved thing, where they are going to say stuff and where they're going to be put their ideas on the line, they're going to exchange ideas with their classmates, they're going to walk out of the room still talking about it, they're going to go home energized about it and talk to their parents about it or their friends. When that's happening, you know you've got a winning English class. You know you're changing the lives of young people and you're getting them engaged in a way that is going to matter to them. Because that discussion, that talk, is the first learning place. And that's the place from which so much else will spring in your class. It will relate to the reading. It will draw the reading out. It will help them develop their thinking about the reading. It will let them share their thinking and see that that good readers are part of a community of readers and they get more and more sophisticated as they do so. It'll prepare for them for writing. The talking will help them get ready to write and will elaborate their writing and let them extend their writing. And you can use talking a lot to improve writing as a stage in the writing process. And I think all of us just know as a gut instinct, we can even remember the classes we were in where we had really good discussions. And I know that all of you want to lead really good discussions in your classes. But you know what? It is very hard to pull it off because it's extremely complicated. You're going to have a whole lot of issues that are influencing your discussion. And you're going to have all those people in the classroom at the same time. That's a lot of interactions. I don't know if you know how it works mathematically for calculating the number of relationships. But if you have, say, three, it's three times two times one. There's six relationships between three people. But you put 25 people in a room, and you do the multiplication, and the total number of possible relationships that are in that room is astronomical. The number of things that are happening in a discussion is huge. Okay, there's the specific words the teacher says. That's one thing. There's also, what is the teacher thinking they want to have happen? That's another thing. Unfortunately, or very interestingly, what is the connection between what you're thinking you want the students to be doing and what you're actually telling them to do? What word for word is coming out of your mouth to tell them what to do versus what you're thinking you want them to do? And so we want to be very attentive to the exact words that the teachers actually use in a discussion. And then so many things can be happening. You've got all these personalities, all these people, all these comments that are being made, sometimes simultaneously, sometimes over what somebody else is saying. And every kind of comment can usually go in three or four different directions at the same time. Okay, what is your role as a teacher? There's so many different things you can do in response to what students are doing and what students are saying. And there's so many ways in which you can shape a course of a discussion to make a different ending or to make a different thing happen in the discussion. People talk about teaching as an art or a science, and they'll say, well, some people have this gift, some people don't. I'm going to try to show you today and convince you that teaching and leading a good discussion is a science. By that I mean you can analyze it, you can break it down, there's specific things you can do, you can learn to do those things, you can do those things, and you can have a very good class discussion. I also have some biases. Okay, one of them is I believe very strongly that everyone in the class should participate in a discussion. I don't think it's okay for three or four students to carry the whole discussion. I don't think it's okay for three or four students not to be part of the discussion. And I remember I mentioned that you go through your given day as a student, and you discover, you're looking at students, and you see that some of these students never say a word. You know, week after week goes by. I don't want that to happen when I'm a teacher. I want to involve all the kids in the discussion. And there's a lot of ways to think about how to make that involvement take place and a lot of complex issues to make that happen and to increase the involvement. I think about it sort of scientifically, which is to say I've got a certain percentage of involvement. How do I build that involvement up? Another very huge part of discussion we're not going to emphasize right now, but it could be a big, long conversation, is how do you prepare students to be ready for the discussion the day before? What is all happening to get you up there to make that discussion happen? I'm especially talking about the kind of thing where you assign some reading and you say, okay, we've read chapter 2 in Grapes of Wrath. Now we're going to get together and have a discussion about it. How do you ensure that they have done the reading, that they understand the reading, and that the reading is that the homework is assigned well, and that the homework is actually completed? That's a really big topic, and it's an important topic, and we'll talk more about that later in the class. But now we're focusing in on that discussion itself, and also the kind of things you do to help build the classroom environment where the discussion is more encouraged, likely to happen. And what I'd like to do now is, having argued that a discussion is a very important part of teaching and that it's a very complex, difficult task. I'd like to now turn it to you guys to carry on the conversation about how you create a successful class discussion. You see on the blackboard, I've written that very question behind us, and that's the one question that we're going to keep working on. We've got one main question and a lot of small pieces that connect to that. Let me tell you what I want our discussion to look like. We've got our big question up there, and you have already had a lifetime of experiences thinking about that, and you've done a bunch of reading on the website about that. So we've got a lot of prior knowledge, and you've done some writing. You've just done some writing in class about that. So you've got a lot of prior knowledge, and you've got that prior knowledge at your fingertips because of the writing that you've done. I'm going to put the question out there, and I'd like one person to start the conversation, and that person's going to bring up an issue, okay, whatever it is. They're going to make a comment. And then I want you to help us build on that comment. Someone says something, then you add to that. And if you can remember their names, utilize their names. We want to have a discussion which builds. And it's a discussion which is going to be, even though we're sitting here kind of in a horseshoe, I want the discussion not to focus on me. I want you to look at everybody else. In fact, if you look at me during the course of discussion, I might look away from you. That doesn't mean I don't want to listen to you. It means that's a signal to you to look at the other people in the room, because I want you to talk to everybody. I'm not, in this particular case, I'm not going to call on people. I want you to volunteer. However, if you have a lot to say, I want you to think judiciously about how to make your comments and then also wait and make sure that other people get involved. And if after a period of time you haven't said anything yet, I want you to feeling the pressure to join in and say something, because I do want to hear from everybody. I may later call on somebody, but I'm not initially going to call on people. And apparently we have this mic, so I'm going to pass this around. Who wants to start us off? What does a teacher do to create a successful class discussion?
I think, first of all, in order for a class to be successful in discussion, you have to have, like, a safe, friendly environment. Kids have to feel comfortable with each other. They have to feel comfortable with the teacher so they can feel free to say whatever they want to say, whatever they're thinking, and not feel judged.
I also think that with that safe, friendly environment, the community feeling in the classroom in general is going to help the kids to open up more, so that when you do ask open-ended type questions, that they're free to express themselves. That I agree that community feeling is definitely the first step in establishing a successful discussion.
But I think to create the community and everything, the arrangement of the classroom is important, and not even just the chairs, like anything else in the room to make it feel comfortable and inviting and everything. And it doesn't have to be in a circle. It can just be however the kids even want.
Also, like when you start a discussion, kind of like what we did, maybe give them some time, give them the topic, then give them some time to write some thoughts down. Or even in our ed classes, what they would do is they would write the topic on the board, and then they'd say, like, just start telling me things you know about this topic already. And then the kids would generate a list of what they already know, and that gets them talking about it, and then you see, like, where they stand on it already, so you kind of know where to go from there.
Also, be careful of kind of falling into a pattern. Don't ask a question and then answer it yourself if you're the teacher. You never want to ask a question and then sit there and wait for an answer and think you're not going to get it and just throw the answer out there, because then the kids are going to get into the habit of knowing that you're going to answer the question for them, so they won't continue in the conversation. Along with that, you don't want to allow one kid to always dominate the discussion, because then the other kids in the class aren't going to offer up their two cents, because they always know that same student is going to chime in and give their answer.
Related to that, you should wait at least like 5 seconds for the students to answer, and if they don't answer, then you should think about whether you asked a good question or not.
Going on what Alice and Ashley said, like the answering and the waiting for time, I think time is more important than just that day, whether it's giving the students the question the day before so they have time to think about it, or having them write a journal before they talk about it in class, or even talking in small groups and then bringing it to the entire class, because they've already shared their ideas with one person. And even if they can be a part of a small discussion rather than a big discussion, it's still going to create that individual as a part of the class. Preparing either the day before or that day, or as Alice just said, waiting a few seconds or looking at the question that you asked and providing time for thought and response.
If you have a student who is dominating the class discussion, you can always hold that kid after or just ask them or discuss with that student the importance of other people talking. And oftentimes the child will just back off, and they know that you're not purposely not calling on them all the time, that you're trying to give other people a chance to be involved.
To help establish the amount of involvement for each student, maybe assign roles to each person, like have a recorder or somebody to record what's going on, and at the end have them summarize what's taking place during the course of the class. It helps keep the kids who are like really overly domineering. It helps keep them busy and distracted, more or less, on their particular role, and helps the other students who are less vocal to become more vocal by fulfilling their role that they've been assigned to complete.
That was one of the things I thought was really interesting, the reading, Rochelle, and it talked about a whole lot of different roles like coordinator, elaborator, information seeker, gatekeeper, and so forth. I like the idea of that as a way to help students learn to be part of a discussion. It doesn't seem to me that you want to do that all the time. It might get a little bit artificial, but it also might be a very good activity to experiment with for a while. One thing I want to mention is that I remember teaching a freshman language arts class in high school, and I worked all fall to build these kids up to be really good at discussion and did a lot of the things you guys are talking about. Probably around January, these freshmen were coming to that class. They were sitting down. We read, you know, long pieces of reading, and they would just go almost by themselves. I would ask like two or three questions, and they would just take off, and they would have these fantastic discussions. It was so amazing. And the next year, I thought, why was it? Did I wait till January before that was happening? And so I said, we are just going to do this, you know, right at the beginning. And so I spent the first couple of days talking about the kind of discussions I want to have and how to do it, and I tried to pull it off, and everything crashed. And I realized it was the months that I spent working with those students to get them ready to have those kinds of discussions that allowed it to happen. So the quality of discussion that we had emerged and changed over the course of the semester and over the course of the year as they learned some of the discussion skills and became more practiced and experienced and also found out my expectations and how I was going to hold them to them. I think that, just as you're pointing out, there's a whole process here that we go through to help prepare students to be good in discussion. What are some other ideas you guys have about things Dietrich can do to create a successful class discussion?
If you can help every student to participate, if you really know your students and know what they're interested in, you know, sometimes hopefully you could ask a personal question to them that related to whatever the discussion was. Also, when I was in high school, I had a teacher that she would make us take like reading quizzes, but if you didn't know the answers to something or you didn't feel like you could articulate your thoughts on a piece of paper, you could write that on the paper and then come see her after school, and you would sit in like a literature circle of like four or five students that stayed after school and just talk about it. And it would give you a chance to be in a small group with the teacher so that you didn't feel so intimidated by, you know, the other 20 students in the classroom, and it gave you more of like a personal time to express your feelings about whatever was being read or being discussed.
I think a big factor also would be to have the students explain their own reasoning. You don't ever want to let them answer a question and then you jump in and explain the reasoning, their reasoning. You have them explain their own reasoning. Have them have this the other students in the class asking them questions so that they can understand that student's reasoning rather than doing it for them.
Something I feel is important, like I forgot which website it was, but it talked about encouraging high-order thinking. Any questions that you ask should be something challenging, not open-ended, that you can get many different responses to. So you want to kind of gear the discussion with questions that are challenging, encourage critical thinking.
I think how you deal with wrong answers or answers that are quite far off all the time in your class, whether it's in a discussion or not, is really important to the discussion times, because if students angry or embarrassed based on how you've treated them after they've said something that's incorrect, then they're never going to want to be part of a discussion or take risks in a discussion. They're not going to be willing to answer questions that they're absolutely sure are right.
Teachers don't keep it real. They need to make the discussion more appealing to the students. They need to find a way to involve them in it that really kind of drags them in. I think Wilhelm talks about that too, about in regard to reading, how you have to let them, the students, have their own experiences with it, find some way to bring them in, because otherwise, I mean, I read books in high school and then discussed them with the teachers in the class, and it was just miserable. I hated the book, and then when I got out of high school, I was able to go back and read those again and discover that I liked the book and that it was actually the way that we had to read it and the discussion we had to have about it after the anyway, so the book was a lot better the second time around because I didn't have these, the teacher telling you how to read it. So I think the discussion has to be pretty open, and it has to appeal to students. It has to reel them in so that they'll want to come back to it a second time.
As well, I think the teacher's enthusiasm is important. If they're just going through the motions,
the students aren't going to be excited about it. They're not going to pick up on how important that issue is. So how the teacher approaches it, I think, is important as well.
Kind of getting back to, like, creating a trusting environment in which it's safe to discuss things in your classroom. I had an experience in high school shortly after September 11th where students in my class were very judgmental against Arab Americans and Arabs in general, and they made comments like, you know, where we should go over and bomb those towel heads or something very judgmental like that. And my teacher didn't say a word to that student. And as an Arab American, I just shut down. I didn't discuss anything in that class for the rest of the semester. So you have to really make sure that while you're leading these discussions, that you don't let them get too out of control and too judgmental.
And that topic of race and gender in discussion was one of the things that came up in the reading. I thought very interesting. I'm not sure if you believed in all of them. One of the things that it talked about was to never make a student feel as if they have to be a representative of a particular group when they're talking in class. I agree with that, but I also would add that I think you can let students choose if they want to be representative. Sometimes a student might say, you know, I want to speak as myself, as an individual, and they might then other times say, I want to talk about this, you know, from the point of view of women. You know, I'm a woman, and let me share how I view that, or whatever. I'm a man, let me share how I view that, or I'm an African American, or I'm an Arab American, and I want to talk about how I think Arab Americans see it. And what might happen right away is somebody else might say, well, I'm not sure all Arab Americans see it the same way, which is, of course, true. I think you can let students have that powerful sometimes to take a stance as a representative of a group, but it's also very important that you not box someone in and say they must represent that group or expect them to have knowledge about their group, which they may or may not have.
I had a really diverse high school, and one of the things that one of my teachers did to kind of create a good classroom environment was we had a lot of different students from different backgrounds, different ethnicities. It was like once a week, you could teach the class something about you and something about your individuality. It wasn't about a certain topic, but that way everybody got to know each other a lot better too, and you're more comfortable with them.
I think allowing students to be more comfortable is something that you have to work up. It crashed when you started it in the beginning of the semester, and then it worked once you did it in January. Or it's something that students will learn and realize that they're comfortable with each other, and then they will open up more in the discussion. So I think creating a comfortable environment is very important for them to actually actively participate in the discussion.
The first thing that happened after the crash was seating charts. Went to seating charts, moved them around a few times. I had to come back and take control over the classroom. Something I talked about before is, I mean, I really believe in a progressive classroom where the students have a lot of authority and responsibility, but somehow that teacher's got to get that authority first and establish it and make it work, and then you can start sharing the authority and helping the students take their responsibility for their learning.